Welcome to an episode of Crippled by Culture, where we talk about everything in life and relate it to the disability and chronically ill community. My name is Sean Gold, and I'm an author, advocate, and nonverbal public speaker for the disability community. To provide a quick visual description for accessibility, I'm a Black man with a white tracheostomy breathing tube in my neck. I am wearing a blue shirt. Next to me is the voice you hear speaking for me. This video is of a Zoom call with me and the person talking for me in one box, and my guest is in the other box next to it. Today, I would like to thank Adam Ross for being my voice in this episode. In this episode, we are talking about the intersections of an invisible disability, poverty, domestic violence, and multiple invisible disabilities. This is a warning that the episode may be hard to listen to or watch. Please take caution when listening and watching. Know your own limits.
Before we get any further into the interview, I want to give a shout out to our partnering nonprofit festival for the series, Festability. As a board member, I helped put together a wonderful event in St. Louis at the Missouri History Museum. We had so many activities and vendors set up all over with an amazing headliner for our main stage. Getting to do this event was a dream come true. It is the best event in St. Louis to celebrate your disability unapologetically. Make sure you come out later this year. More information will be available soon. Thank you, Festability, for sponsoring the series. Now, back to the show.
Now, let's go to today's amazing guest. Puneet Singh is from New Delhi, India. Puneet is a person with stammering and an undiagnosed learning disability. He identifies as a neurodivergent individual. His life has been an intersection of poverty, domestic violence, and multiple invisible disabilities, and how they navigated and interacted with these intersections. He is the founder of a nonprofit called START, working towards normalizing speech and communication disabilities, especially stammering. He is a disability inclusion and accessibility advocate. Thank you for being here today. I'm so happy to meet you. How are you doing? Would you mind giving a visual description of yourself, please?
Thank you so much, Sean, for having me. My name is Puneet, and I'm a South Asian man, brown man with black hairs, mustache, and beard. I am wearing a yellow t-shirt, black headphones, and I'm sitting on a black chair, and I'm so excited to be on this episode with Sean. Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate that. First, do you identify with having a disability or chronic illness? If so, do you mind sharing what disabilities or chronic illnesses you have?
Yes, I proudly identify myself as a person with multiple invisible disabilities. And I'm a person with stammering and an undiagnosed learning disability, which is a mix of dyslexia plus dyspraxia. So I have challenges with my motor skills, and I'm a very slow learner when it comes to learning a new skill. I have coordination issues, and when I do certain things which require coordination, which require some kind of balance motor skills, which require multiple movements of hand, legs, and eyes, I face challenges. And also I face, like, I'm a person with stammering, and I face challenges while articulating sentences as well, like even more in English, because English is not my first language, so I have to I can mess up with the formation of sentences as well. So it's a pretty a diverse and pretty interesting combination of characteristics that I have.
Thank you. How do your disabilities affect your everyday life?
I think talking about stammering, it doesn't affect my everyday life anymore, but the first 20 years of my life was very difficult because I was living in denial. I was bullied and I was mocked, and I people, you know, just see me as a person with stammering, and this was the central point of my identity, which is not correct and not justified to anyone who has any kind of disability, because we are much more than our disability. We are rich and complex. We have personalities which cannot be just put in the box of disability. So I think it's pretty complex in terms of, you know, how I was defined, but not anymore. I enjoy my stammering now. And now I believe that it's just the way we speak, and it's nothing negative or bad about it. It is just, you know, just like my last name or my first name, just the way, like I don't have any issues with that. And about my learning disability, like it's like I know that I need to practice more if I'm learning a new skill, and I have to be more patient about it. But it has made me a very sensitive human being, and I really appreciate that I know the value of every single word. I know the value of everything, every thing that I am doing from my hands, from my leg. Like everything is that I'm so grateful of everything. So it has helped me to practice gratitude as well. But certainly, I do not think myself or anyone with personal with disabilities that we are any less or we are not enough. Certainly, we have our own challenges which no one can deny. But it doesn't make us any less of a human being. We are still capable, and we still deserve happiness and pleasure and anything that is that a human being deserves in his life. Yeah.
How old were you when you got diagnosed?
I started to stammer a little late. You know, generally it is said that kids started to stammer like 4-5 years of age, but I started to stammer around 8, and it was because my father was physically and mentally abusive, and I think witnessing violence in my early years has this effect on me, and so I was diagnosed at around eight years, and not only this, that like I became quite introvert because of the difficult childhood that I have. So along with poverty and domestic violence, I was facing ableism, bullying, and discrimination on the basis of my disabilities.
How did you cope with that abuse?
It was I think I started to spend my day alone. My favorite place in the house was like there was a dark room, like very dark room there, where there was no window, and I used to sit there for hours, not thinking about anything, just escaping from the world, and this was my safe space, because no one can see me, no one can hear my stuttering voice. So yeah, it was pretty much of hiding and running and escaping from the world.
Do you feel like there are other things going on that you feel are not diagnosed?
I have self diagnosed myself, and I'm trying to get my diagnosis, but it's very expensive and not accessible in India to get yourself diagnosed. So I'm still trying to find a affordable service, a affordable professional service, but which is quite challenging to find here in India.
Did you have to go through your own internalized ableism?
Yes, I think teenage is a very very challenging age where we are going through hormonal changes, where we ask very basic and existential questions to ourselves. And at that time, when you are just laughed upon by your classmates and by your friends, your family, your neighbors, your relatives. So I think you actually accept as a young boy that I was accepting myself, and that I think there is something wrong with me. There is something that I need to work upon. I need to improve. I need to fix myself. I need to cure my condition. So it was very challenging, and I was always there to prove a point. That I have to score good marks in my schools. I have to be good in sports. I have to try to make a point. I have to show to the world that I'm worthy. I can win. I can be successful in sports and academics and other extracurricular activities as well. Which was very 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 draining. I don't live to prove a point now. I'm living for myself. If I want to do an adventure, if I want to do a certain activity, I'm doing it for myself now. And it's enough of this running and this trying to know that okay, I'm gonna show to the world this is not the attitude I enjoy anymore. I do not practice this kind of internal ableism anymore. But in my teenage, I was severely affected by all of these things externally and internally.
What are the misconceptions about people who stutter or stammer?
It's the medical model, or what I call it, pathologizing stuttering, like this is not the way to speak. First of all, there is no single way to speak, as there is no single way to do anything, right? There is no single answer to exist. So there are some speech language pathologists and therapists who claim that it is a lifestyle choice. It is a deficiency, it is a disability, it is a disorder that you are speaking in a particular manner. If you are blocking, or if you are repeating, if you are stopping, this is not the ideal way to speak. So I believe that this is not the it is not, there are many scientific papers that has proved what I'm saying, that it is just the way we speak, it is just the way our minds are wired. So stammering is providing a diversity in the form of expression. We are making this world, we are providing a kind of richness and a kind of complexity when it comes to speaking. So it is adding to the diversity. It is not a bad or negative thing. Many people say that in our religion, Hinduism and and Buddhists believe. They believe that we have done something bad in our past lives and we are facing the punishment. So we are getting the punish, like it is with all the other disabilities as well, and particularly it is with stammering, because maybe you were a liar in your past life, so that's why you couldn't speak properly, because you lied so many times in your previous age, which is utter bullshit. So these kind of things definitely affect us. And I receive a lot of calls from young people who stammers like at night, and they say that, you know, I just want to fix this issue. I just want to speak properly. So in my organization, we try to practice acceptance. We try to embrace our uniqueness, and it's all about normalizing stammering. Like, I want to see a world where someone is stammering, someone is stuttering, or maybe someone is like, is a person with disability, and no one looks at a person with a different eye, right? You know, we are not superhuman, and or nor we are an object of pity. We are just human beings, and we deserve, and we are worthy of the respect that any human beings deserve. So it's a human right. I always say that disability right is a human right. It is not a special need or special right. It is just a human right.
That's a crazy yet interesting intake on it. Do you think people take you less seriously due to this?
Okay, this is like, I would like to continue from what I was saying, that so previously when I was stuttering in public, people used to see me as an no, give me sympathy, give me, you know, that you deserve our pity. Now you are infantizing me, that I'm like a little kid. So which is of course I would find it very I was offended by all of such incidents, and now people are trying, like, you are inspirational, you are leading with example, you are a leader, which is fine. But at the end of the day, there is no balance. Like, either you have pity or sympathy, or either you are enjoying the inspiration porn that we are providing you. So let's stop thinking in binary, and let's have a more human approach towards disability, towards stammering, towards invisible disability as well. Because our disabilities are not visible, so you will not know that we are a person with disability. But it doesn't mean that we are trying to have an advantage because of our disability. So I see to the world that be little kind, be little supportive, and practice curiosity, practice gratitude, practice listening, and it is very important to actually have this kind of open mind when it comes to disability. And if you don't know, ask questions, and questions should be well articulated as well. It should not be offensive, or it should not be making us feel like we are kids, or we are like it makes no sense. Talk to us like we are humans. We are not from some other planet. We are just different.
What is the difference between stuttering and stammering? Is there a difference at all?
No, there is no difference. In United States, it is called stammering, and in United Kingdom English, it's called stammering. There is no such difference.
Where can people get information about stammering?
I think there are a lot of good organizations that are working in the field of stammering, and I will recommend you can check STEMA, that is British Stammering Association, And you can on 22nd of October there will be International Stuttering Awareness Day, ISAD. So you can check www.isad.com as well. They are having very good resources on stammering, and I have wrote a poem for them this year as well. And I think listeners can check out my poem on listening. And also you can check my own website, that is www.ssstart.org.
How do you explain being a neurodivergent? What does that mean?
I think it is like, it is a pretty natural phenomena which is recently discovered, and I think as humanity and science, we are late to discover that there are some people who think in a different way, who act in a different way. So for example, we have autism. So up to few years back, people used to think that people with spectrum of autism, they lack social skills. But now only people have realized that it is not the lack of social skills. This is the ableist perspective of looking at the people with autism. So I think it's just about the perspective that, you know, that neurotypicals or the people who don't have disability are defining everything, because they have the access to research papers, they have the access to media. We are not that visible in cinema, media, and press, and all of these things. So I think it's the narrative that puts us down, and we are just adding as the term is said, neurodiversity. We are adding to the diversity, and we are adding to the complexity and the beauty of humanity. And it is high time that we acknowledge and appreciate the beauty and the richness that we are adding to humanity.
How does being neurodivergent affect your everyday life?
That's a very good question. I think that's every day. So I am very active during night. During day, I'm not that active. So a lot of people who have ADHD are interestingly very active at night as well. So I'm still exploring that if I have some symptoms or, you know, characteristics of a person with ADHD, but still, like, it's a lot of emotional turmoil is there. A lot of, you know, sometimes I need to take a break just to give myself an air, because I'm working with people with disabilities as well, and there are a lot of horrific stories that I listen to people every day. Like, I got calls at night, at day, and, you know, people are like saying that that they were expelled from their job just because of their disability. They are being bullied in their colleges and schools because of the way they speak, and all of these things. So I think around June, when I was working very hard, I faced a burnout, and I have to take a break of 10 days just to, you know, just to get that freshness and just to get that mental peace again, because I was really touched. Because, you know, I'm a person with disability. So anyone who comes to me and who has a disability, I feel that he or she or they, like, they are part of me. They are not something different. So I empathize with them a lot, and I'm very emotionally connected with all of my participants and community members. So it is very difficult to bring that objectivity and neutrality to my work. So I think I need to I require a lot of breaks, frequent breaks from my work. because the kind of work I'm doing is very emotionally demanding, and I'm a very sensitive, I'm a very emotionally sensitive person as well. So I'm still exploring how to manage such challenges, but certainly I'm living my dream. I'm so happy that I am trying to bring a little positive change in our society through my work, and let's see how it goes. But I'm trying my best, and I'm living my dream. I'm so happy about that.
What do you think you've learned that stays with you on a daily basis from the disability community or a specific disabled person?
I think the world never see the association of disability and pleasure. Like they never see us like that we deserve love, especially romantic love. They don't see that we can have sexual desires. So it's pretty it's a taboo in the developing world, in the so-called global south, where we cannot express our desires in public. So they see that, you know, they see that we are just disabled. We are just struggling to survive. We are just existing in this world, and we cannot have any desires. We cannot have any wish to have pleasures in our life, which is very. I think this is also a one kind of ableism that we face in our everyday life, and I think it's completely okay to have such desires. And sometimes, you know, we only have this thing that why I'm expecting to have happiness in my life, why I'm in love with someone, why I am expecting to have all of these desires. Like it's very, you know, it's a kind of a round circle. It's kind of how we internalize what is happening in our external world. So I'm like, I'm trying to explore and trying to develop such curriculum for my workshops where we can interact and we can discuss that how can we unapologetic about our disability, and we're not sorry about the way we are.
Now, your involvement in the disability community. How does domestic violence affect the disability community?
We are the most vulnerable section of the society when it comes to domestic violence in particular, because we require care, and they are like many times the caretaker are from our family, which is pretty problematic at times, because they are having some emotional challenges to actually be with us all the time, or to provide us care and to provide us medical supplies, food, and our requirements. So they think that they can be violent, not always physical, but mental abuse as well, and which happens because we are seen as a burden. We are not provided with the proper employment of opportunities, proper insurance, and proper healthcare. So I think should be a role of government as well as our families and our healthcare system to come together and create a proper solution. Because of that, because it's really challenging at times.
Sexual assault cases for our community are at 50%. Is it tied in with domestic? Are they the same? Different?
I believe it is a part of domestic violence, because there's a lack of consent when it comes to sexual activities with, like, in regard to people with disabilities. Our bodies should be ours, and the choice should be ours to what to do with our bodies, which society and which some of even our family members and friends doesn't give us that freedom to decide, and they can have, like, at times they can exploit us and harass us. And I think it should be a more stringent law should be there. And talking about India and talking about most of the global south, I think the situation is much bad. The number should be around 60 to 70%, because it's really the access to opportunities, access to laws and policies that supports people with disabilities are very less. And even if there are laws that supports us, there is no such awareness that these laws exist, because of lack of education or maybe a lack of financial freedom as well. So I think we should be provided with the proper awareness programs and the access to actually have legal counseling as well at times, because I think we don't have that awareness and information which we need at times to protect ourselves against such incidents. So I think it goes both way, and again the role comes of the policy makers, who can make more strong policies. And I believe that the policy makers should make more strong policies and laws to support people with disabilities, and also we should be provided with proper legal counseling, because at times we are not aware of our rights, and people see us as one vulnerable at times. So I think the role of government and role of policymakers are very important here as well.
People with disabilities are more likely to experience things like this. Why hasn't there been public awareness of this happening?
I think there are awareness, but the point is that we as a society, as a human society, we are not acting on such awareness. In terms of, we read a lot on social media. There are some trends on, like, we are always on social media, right? And think about it. I give you an example that people are pretty much active and pretty much aware of all the things that are happening in the business world. People are aware of the blockchain. People are aware of the cryptocurrency. People are aware of, all of these developments. And when it comes to social issues, when it comes to people with disabilities, when it comes to LGBTQI community, when it comes to domestic violence, people said we are not aware. Like, I think there is a lack of interest. That if people have interest, they will read more about it. If people have interest, people will have more knowledge naturally about these issues. So I think it's more about the choice, and I talk about India. Like, there are a lot of programs which is for awareness, and it just become a show of photos, of taking photos, making videos, putting up on social media, and there is no deep reflection. There is no deep observation of the issues that we were talking about in that particular event. So I think there is a lack of interest, which will come in like internally, which will come with more empathy, which will come with more genuine curiosity to make this society, to make our world a better place to live for everyone. Because once we have an inclusive society, once we have an accessible society, the world is better for all of us. There are certain examples which I can give, like we talk about remote control. So remote controls were actually invented for the people with limited mobility. They were not invented for all of us, but eventually everyone is using remote control to operate TV, to operate ACs, to operate everything. So if you're making the society accessible for people with disabilities, you are making the infrastructure better for all of us. So there should be a world should be grateful towards us at times that we are providing them opportunity to make the world better to live. There are certain, there are many examples. We talk about ramps. So ramps are taken as though they are just only for wheelchair users, but actually oldest people and maybe the people who have suitcases or trolleys or buggies or anything that can roll, that have wheels, they can use ramps to actually go over it, right? So ramps is not only for wheelchair users. Ramps are there for everyone, and it is making the infrastructure better. Closed captions were invented for deaf people, but now we have closed captions and subtitles for everyone, and everyone is enjoying and making enjoying videos with subtitles now. So there are many examples across the history that a particular invention was done for people with disability, and now it is beneficial for all of the humanity. So if people can think this way, if people can think that we are you are not doing us a favor, but actually you are doing you are making the whole world better for all of us, then a change will happen.
Over 50% of the disabled and chronically ill community lives in poverty. How can we address this issue?
That's a very critical question, because I know a lot of people with disabilities who beg on the street, who have nothing to eat. I don't know like they don't know that even if they were able to eat before they sleep at night. So it's the situation is pathetic. The situation is horrible. And the point is that is our perspective. Like if the society and the government and if the companies think that people with disabilities are burden, because in the United States there is a lot of work in this to provide employment to people with disabilities, in India as well. But if you see these laws and regulations just as a tick box, just as a formality, then it will not bring real change. The change should happen from within. And if we are provided with real opportunity, real equity, then we can be an asset. Once we were not getting the opportunity to be there to actually work, to actually get this employment opportunities, what we can do? So I think our situation is bad because of lack of opportunities, and it's high time that government acknowledge that it is their loss, on so many levels, loss on the level of humanity, loss on the level of economics. Our economics can get better if people with disabilities are included. Our society can get better if people with disabilities are getting proper access to opportunities. And certainly there are a lot of aspects which will improve if there is proper opportunity to us.
Does this contribute to how disabled people are the most vulnerable to go through domestic violence?
Certainly, certainly, because you know, we were already facing challenges because of our disability, because of the inaccessible infrastructure. And then we do not have proper access to educational and employmental opportunities. And then there are some people who are thinking of us as burden, because we are not doing anything. Like you're just sitting idle all day. So I think you're not asset. So if these kind of attitude are there towards us, and there is no real action from the government, from the policymakers, it will be like that. There will be no change. It's a tragedy. It's horrific to think like that way. But I've seen very sad scenes around India that has really made me feel worse at times. And I'm always very active on Twitter. I always am very active on LinkedIn to actually put across my voice to the policymakers and the government that it is high time to listen to us. And as disability inclusion advocates, I am just looking forward to make people realize that what you are losing on. And it's not just us who are living a terrible life. It is also the potential of the society that is not being realized because we are not getting proper opportunities. And if we are included, if we are getting the opportunity, companies are using us as token. You know that we have this much of people with disabilities, and not like this, not actual, like. If I talk to certain people, and I have talked like that, what is the kind of attitude that you face in your day-to-day life, in your workplace? Is your office or is your workspace accessible? Then only we can know that what is the real condition of people with disabilities in that particular organization. So there is a lot of work to be done, and for us, we need to do a lot of work through our advocacy, through our activism, to be really vocal, to put across our voice, to put across our social media post, and to be there on the everywhere where we say that actually this is high time that we need this and we deserve this. So we have a very critical role to play, I must say that.
How can disabled people specifically get help when being in domestic violence situations? What resources are available to us specifically, if any?
I talk about my experience, and I talk about how me and my mother was coping. We contacted police. Of course, the first resort is police, and we were not listened properly. We were said that it's your family, you have to live like that, and take care of your father, listen to your father what he's saying. And then we approached women department, where my mother wrote an application request that this is what I'm facing in my everyday life, and they actually have no power, they have no power to give a fine or penalty or any kind of punishment to the abuser. So I think there are a lot of bodies that are working, but these bodies have no actual power here in India. Like they can just suggest, they can just give warnings, but when it comes to actually give any kind of imprisonment or any kind of real action, there was no such help available to us at that point of time. And still things have not changed much, and I have seen people getting support after they put videos of abuse in social media, and then police get active, police take very quick action because of the pressure that they receive from the media. So at that time we were not aware, we didn't have that smartphone, we didn't have access to internet, so we were not able to post such videos. But now I think people are very active and people are posting such videos. But if you talk about government role and the police role here in India, I think a lot of work has to be done. But if I have to give certain suggestions, I must say that give your written application by mail or by email, so that you have the proof that you have given your request, and then you keep approaching higher authorities in hierarchy and keep trying. Like it's a very tedious task, and I'm not pretty positive at this point of time about our regulatory and law bodies, to be honest.
Are victims from our community more trapped in these situations than non-disabled individuals?
It is bound to happen. It is bound to happen because of the attitude of our so-called officers, our so-called decision makers. When we approach a legal body, when we approach the judiciary bodies, they see that we are not independent, we are not financially and economically, emotionally, and all of this on all of these things we are not independent. So they say that if they are abusive, at least you have food, you have shelter. So they are being dismissive, and in other words, they are saying that just because you have a disability, you deserve to be abused, you deserve that violence, you deserve that physical and mental harassment.
How are people able to have access to violate the disabled person? Are these people usually like our caretakers and family members?
Most often they are very close. Maybe the caretaker, maybe the family members, because they live in very close proximity to people with disabilities. And like think like that maybe at times when our caretaker, when our family members are struggling emotionally, or maybe are not in the best frame of mind, or maybe he is a violent person, like by nature he or she is violent. So what will happen? Who is the most weakest person in the house? Who is the most vulnerable person in the house? We the people of disabilities, like we are very close. So I think we can protect ourselves from the outsiders, because just because we are living in the walls of our house. But if the abuser, if that abusive person is from our family, what we can do? So I think in India, there is no having a caretaker, having a professional caretaker is a big luxury, is a big privilege. 90% of the population cannot afford to have a professional caretaker. So at times, mother, father, brother, sister, wife, husband, these are the ones who are providing us the care. And if they are providing the care, so we are at their mercy. And at the end of the day, we all are human beings, and we can commit certain abusive activities. So I think it's pretty problematic here in India and everywhere, to be honest.
What are the signs, if any, of a predator or abuser to look out for?
I think they try to control, they try to dominate, they have this thing that we are providing you, okay, we are giving you our time, we are giving the effort, we are because of me, you are surviving, you are living because of me, you know. So this kind of attitude, this kind of a language which is very dismissive, which is very dominating, which is very toxic. So what can happen with us, that we will think, okay, because of this person I'm living my life and I'm good for nothing, just because of this person I'm able to survive. So I think so this kind of emotional turmoil goes through, emotional dilemmas goes through, and even if we go through some physical or mental abuse, we said, okay, that's fine, no issue, because he is providing us the care, he or she is providing the care, so he can be little abusive at times, because you know, we are a burden, we are not doing anything. So all of these, you know, constant dialogue has been going through. And by again saying, you know, if you say a lie to a person 100 times, I think this lie will go to the subconscious mind, and then we will also think that maybe this person is saying true.
It's like a controlling and trapped mindset that is hard to get out of.
Absolutely.
How are things harder for those in the community who are LGBT like myself with this issue?
I think I would say that if you are an LGBTQI plus person with disability or with disabilities, you are marginalized within the marginalized as well. So it's pretty, the situation here in India is pretty problematic, because you know, if you come out of the closet and you say that no, I'm gay, or I'm lesbian, so I think your life can be at danger as well. And so I always recommend that take your time and don't tell anyone about that, because it is about the life. I don't want to do that. I'm actually sorry about that, but it is about the life, and I think life should be the utmost priority. Because of our disabilities, we are already marginalized, and then just because we show our sexual orientation, and then I think the situation can change, and even the family that doesn't support at that time. So, God, I think that situation is terrible.
Has this pandemic played a role in making things worse by us having to be stuck in our home for over 2 years?
Pandemic, absolutely. And now this Russia-Ukraine war, because of which the inflation is at all-time high, the healthcare system is almost broken. During COVID and now because of this this stupid war, so I think it's certainly not a good time in terms of healthcare, in terms of our medical supplies, in terms of all of such basic needs, and all over the world the government have been a failure to actually manage the crisis and actually provide us the relief, because you know because of being in home and because of you know facing a kind of a mental health emergency, and then comes the inflation, and then comes all of such other challenges as well. So it's a trap. It's a difficult situation for all of us.
Switching to lighter topics, you mentioned wanting more inclusion for the neurodivergent community. How can that happen?
I think we, as society, the corporate world, the leadership, the management, have to be more sensitive. I repeat this sentence many times. It is just a difference. It is nothing bad, not negative, not a past life punishment. It is just a difference. And this difference is adding to the diversity. If we keep this in mind, I think to bring a real inclusion will be much more easier. And to have neurodiverse people in the board as an active stakeholder, to have them in the leadership role where they can share their lived experiences, where they can share their challenges, where they can share their insights and input, things can improve manifold. And it's about anything good or anything bad happens from within. So if we have inclusion in our heart, if we have an open mind towards neurodiversity in our workplaces, in our educational institutes, in all the other sphere of society, we can bring a change for sure. But we need to actually have this frame of mind.
What can the environment do to become more accessible for you and others with your condition?
First of all, there should be a general culture of respect, and there should be an ethical literacy. By ethical literacy, I mean that a minimum respect should be given to anyone. That respect should be there irrespective of race, irrespective of color, irrespective of disability, irrespective of sexual orientation or whatever it is. We deserve, as human beings, a certain respect, irrespective of our identity or background. And talking about his stammering and talking about neurodiversity, or like if we behave in a certain way, if we walk in a certain way, if we act in a certain way, all of these things, all of these characteristic is not a sign of low intellectual capability. And like we are capable, we have ideas, we can have skills, we can be really good in our projects, in our workplaces, in our jobs, and there should be zero tolerance to bullying by co-staff, by HRs, and even seniors. And if someone is complaining, if someone is going and if someone is escalating certain issues of bullying, I think there should be very strict action on time, because as we all know, justice delayed is justice denied. And I think generally, talking very generally, if we get an environment where our insights are welcomed without judging, mocking or bullying, then I believe that neurodiversity can play an important role in enabling more humane interactions.
Why do you think it hasn't happened yet?
Yeah, it hasn't happened because corporate people are doing all of these things, the so-called hashtag diversity, equity, inclusion, belongingness, all of these things just as a formality, just to tick a box, right? They are just using us for branding and marketing, that look at us, we are a diverse organization, we practice inclusion on their social media post, on their promotional activities, on their advertisement, they put it out loud. But we have to ask, are you really an inclusive organization? Most often they are not. Like if we talk, I talk to a lot of people with disabilities in India, and they say that we face such horrible instances of bullying, of discrimination, of ableism on our day-to-day lives. So instead of ticking a box, practice real and thorough inclusion.
Thank you for coming to have this conversation with me today. Was there anything else that you wanted to discuss today that we didn't touch on?
I think it is pretty much it. I think the questions were amazing. I have to think a lot to actually answer these questions, and thank you so much, Seen, for having me. I really appreciate that. It was amazing to be on your show, and I'm looking forward that when this episode will be out, and I'm going to share it with my network very soon. Thank you so much, Seen, for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation with me. I hope you have enjoyed this as much as I did. I appreciate the insights that you provided as well. If people wanted to connect with you and support the work you do, where can they do so?
I am most active on LinkedIn with my same name, Puneet, Puneet, Singh, Singh, single, Singhal, and you can find me on LinkedIn.
I will make sure to share everything in my description below. Once again, I'm Sean Gold. Thank you for watching. Make sure you like, comment all your thoughts, and subscribe. I'll see you next time on another episode of Crippled by Culture.